Abby. Dear Abby, is my husband crazy or am I? He has worn glasses for years and says when he takes his glasses off, he can't hear. Do you think he should have his head examined? Signed, Irritated Abby's Wife.
Bring it up there, please. Dear Abe's Wife, there are many mysterious things that deal with the human organism. There are many things beyond the realm of, let's say, consistently logical contemplation. So we can only say, burn one of those candles, look out into the dark blackness of the night, and hope for the best. Next question.
That's why I've got it on here. It's the worst thing I've ever heard in my life. That's the way to get a mad man. Oh, there's mysterious stuff going on everywhere. Everywhere. Oh, my God.
Oh, there are mysterious things going on every place. Every place. In fact, we have a little note here from Belgrade. Those of you who think it's only happening here, police in Zagreb, capital of Croatia. I didn't know they still had a Croatia. My God, that sounds like Lilliputia. A police in Zagreb, capital of Croatia, were baffled last December by a computer which seemed to have turned itself into a garrulous political agitator. Every time anyone inquired about trade or business particulars at the Zagreb Electronic Data Processing Center, which owned the computer, this fantastic machine returned slips of paper on which, instead of their desired data, anti-government slogans were printed. It was a political computer. As the police could not arrest the computer, they had to spend the next couple of months investigating the staff that was feeding it with data. And they've just completed their investigation. As a result, one female and four male students are facing a political court in Zagreb on charges of sedition and hostility to the state. By the way, the computer is still saying anti-government stuff. So it's everywhere you go, you know. Hey, I'll tell you, no, seriously, tonight we have a very serious type program. It's, you know, it's that time of year. It's coming out this summer. And this is a time when man's hopes outrun his ability to pull it off. In fact, there's hardly anybody out there listening tonight who does not feel this summer I'm going to go all the way. I ain't going to blow this one. I'm not going to screw up this summer. That's right. That's what you say now. All of a sudden, you're going to wake up and it's going to be September 12th. And you're going to wonder what the hell happened to the summer. You didn't get out of town even 2 weekends. You know, when you did, you stood for 14 hours on the Long Island Expressway with helicopters flying over you, telling you not to go on the Long Island Expressway. And, you know, we're all, let's face it, we're all caught in the fantastic thing here. It's just like, you know, it's like if you can imagine ants who somehow developed individualism. Can you imagine how unhappy an ant would feel in an anthill? I mean, if ants had a concept of individualism, you know? Well, that's the trouble with man. He's basically an ant with an additional, well, you remember the ant thing. I remember Miss Shields when I was in second grade. Miss Shields had to study a whole semester. We had to study this ant colony in a little glass thing. And we had to write stuff on how much people were like ants or vice versa. Did you ever do that? You never saw ants in an ant colony? Oh, they do all the stuff that people do. Yeah, they do. They have riots, the whole bit. Yeah, they do. They do. They have little wars and stuff, you know. They have guys that sit around and get drunk and you know, just the usual stuff that people do. And it's like today, I'm in this cab, see. You got to be very careful when you're dealing with your fellow human being any time. It's always been the same. And, you know, it must have been the same in the cave, you know. And I'm sitting in this cab. Me and this human being are sharing one moment of time together. We have been hurled into juxtaposition merely by the luck of the draw. I mean, his cab could have been over on 8th Avenue instead of 6th Avenue. It could have been on a different street corner. and he and I came together for this brief instant. I waved my hand, and this clattering hulk roared up to the corner. He cut off 15 different trucks when he did it. You know, you could hear crashes and thundering uproars and explosions as he cut across the traffic. Man, I'll tell you, some of these New York cab drivers, man, they're driving hand grenades with four wheels. You know, he just came cutting across the traffic. I could crash, bam, guys running up on the street. I get calmly into the car, you know. I get in the back seat there. And just like every cab ride in New York, you know, it was filled with all kinds of little alarms and excursions. And I'm sitting in the back of this cab, seeing I can see that somebody has been very sick in the back of this cab before I get in there, all over the floor. So I'm sitting there with my feet up, see, so especially since I'm wearing sandals, you know, it can be exciting. So I'm sitting there, seeing this, and this stuff is floating around down on the bottom of the floor there, and it's kind of aromatic. Now, I'm not inventing the news. I'm just relating it to you. This is a fun city. So it's very aromatic, and I can see cigar butts floating around. And then once in a while, something seems to be swimming in there. I could see a hand reach out of it, the little claw. And so I'm sitting there with my feet up. And with that, the guy in the front there, see, he's got this red neck. You know, he's looking real mad, see, all right from the start. And I got my feet up there, and he says, "Where you want to go?" I said, "Take me up to 40th Street and 6th Avenue." He said, "What side of the street you want to go on?" I said, "I don't care. It's all right, let's go on the west side, okay?" He said, "All right." So we go back into the traffic. And boom, cars roaring all over. The temperature's getting hotter, and the sun is hitting down on the top. Well, of course, I got my feet up because of the stuff that's all over down in the bottom there. You don't say anything to guys like that in a cab anymore. You just accept that kind of stuff, see? Well, he's looking at me through the rearview mirror. I can see that one little beady eye. See, he's looking at me through the mirror there. I look up there at him, and all of a sudden he says, "What do you got your feet up for? Take your feet off the seat." I said, "What was that?" He says, "Take your feet off the seat." So I thought for a minute. I says, "Well, look, Mac, you stick your head through the window here and look back and see what's all on the floor." He said, "What are you talking about?" I said, "Look what's on the floor." And he slides the thing back, and he sticks his head back, and he looks down, and he sees this great sea of glop, you know. He looks me right in the eye, says, "What kind of pig are you?" I said, "I didn't do it. I got the cameras all over the floor." He said, "All right, shut up." So we drove in dead silence through the traffic. We finally got up to 40th Street. And he turns to me, so I give him the dough for the cab driver, which came to maybe $15, $20. After all, I was going over 10 blocks, you know. So I give him the money. And $8 tip, you know. Yeah, this is all part of the scene here in New York now. So I hand him the dough. And as I'm getting out, he says, "Now I'm going to have to clean the cab." I said, "Well, you know, I used a phrase which I learned in the Army, which describes a tough, scene." So I says, "Ah, yeah." He says, "Ah, now I'm going to clean it." I says, "You slob." I said, "I didn't do it. Somebody else did it." He says, "Don't give me that." And I knew that I was right back home. I was back in that good old New York. And so as I marched off, I realized once again, man, as he marches up the great ladder of evolution, as he marches towards God knows what destination, as he ascends this enormous ladder of life, the winds of adversity that blow out of the deep hell pits of time singe his tail feathers as he looks for the glass cases of the eternal anthill of his own existence. Now, I'm just going to ask you a technical question. You keep that behind me, Larry, because this is, good for music or technical questions. I'm going to ask you a technical question. I mean, I think of those little ants. Between those two little pieces of glass, those little ant colonies, you can buy them, you know. Are the ants aware that vast, gigantic creatures, compared to them, are watching them carry out their tiny little lives as they run around and lay their eggs and fist fight and get drunk and have their little wars? Are they aware of this? No. I submit to you, no. Could it be then that we are carrying out our curious existences between two vast cosmic sheets of glass? and that we are being observed by something a hell of a lot bigger than us. That just said, look at them. They're amazing how they act. They act almost like they have sense. Almost, not quite, but they act almost like they could have sense. And these are the things that go whistling through the empty skulls on the dark night of the brightly lit dune on 6th Avenue. As you struggle your way past Macy's, I suspect that when all of us are gone, 2 million years from now, and all the human beings on the face of the globe will have disappeared, there'll still be a traffic jam in front of Macy's. I suspect this is the only eternal thing that we've got in our time. So sing it out, gang. Wait a minute now. Hold it there. Now, reset that. That you just cut it. Reset it there, Larry. I don't know whether you did that. I had to think. Hey, you know, speaking of serious things, though, I mean, you know, the mysterious stuff that's happening, you know, there's been a lot of talk about whether or not the Bible was referring to people when it made its famous statement about the meek inheriting the earth. It did not say at any point meek people. Because I think by definition, people are not meek. No way. There's just some that's louder than others, but that doesn't mean anything. I mean, I just cannot concede that the meek, which reminds me, by the way, speaking, this is WOR, New York. This is the station for the meek. The station for the meek. And would you set the little TAP thing up there, Larry? Hit the button there. We have a little of this cheap guitar music. Yeah, thank you. Rick-a-ting, tick-a-ting. Lick-a-ting, tick-a-ting. This is a special little commercial here for youth types. If you want to meet the kids of Italy, take your vacation in Portugal, friend, because that's where all the Italian kids are this year. Not only Italian, England, Germany, Switzerland, Denmark. Have you ever made it? Oh, man, the Swedish ones are there laying around on the beach. And so that the kids of America will not be left out of all this great action that's going on, TAP, the Intercontinental Airline of Portugal, is introducing a special youth fare. Only $210 round-trip economy airfare to Portugal. And the ticket is good for a year. Anyone under 26 and over 12 is eligible. So I've got myself a little beanie, you know. I'm going down there. I got a beanie, and I'm going to get myself a couple of frost sticks that I eat, you know, and a little can of pot. And so everybody will think that I'm, you know, just about 12 and a half. In Portugal, you'll meet the European kids in the wine country and do it all. The prices are incredibly low. The food is great. And the people move real good. Call your travel agent or TAP at 421-8500 for complete information about TAP's $210 youth fare to Portugal. Go where the European kids go. Portugal. All right, thank you, Larry. Larry, thank you very much. Did you say that you had a Newsday spot in there? Okay. 1, 2, 3, 4. Hit it.
Over the past 32 years, Newsday, the Long Island newspaper, has become one of the great success stories in publishing history. Recently, we started a Sunday edition. And what Newsday has done so well 6 days a week, we're now doing just as well on Sunday. For example, the editorial page section.
I'm Bob Weimer, editorial writer and columnist for Newsday. In our coverage of the news, we tell you what's happening. In our editorial page section, we try to tell you why it's happening. We call this section Viewpoints in the Daily Paper. In Sunday's expanded section, we call it Ideas. It's the place where you'll find hard-hitting editorials and the political cartoons of Pulitzer Prize winner Tom Darcy, where Newsday columnist Patrick Owens and I often sharply disagree, where politicians and professors and our own readers sound off. It's your journal of opinion.
Newsday. Long Island's own Sunday newspaper. No service charge for home delivery.
Hey, listen, speaking of politicians, we have a little note here that Herb Klein, who is White House Communications Director, is going to be on the gambling show Wednesday morning on WOR. He was over in Moscow and all that. And so he'll answer any questions concerning President and Mrs. Nixon's journey to Moscow. So you better listen Wednesday morning on WOR, the Rambling with Gambling show. And you better take down the phone number if you want to get ready to give him a call. That's Herb Klein. The area code is 212, and the number is 868. They have a special number here. 868-8500. You can call up Herb and yell at him, or whatever it is you want to do. You know, speaking of mysterious things, I don't know how quite to approach this. I don't know, you know? Because people generally think that the earth is going to be inherited by meek people. And for a long time, I thought it was going to be the cockroaches that inherit the earth. But I'm not sure of that now. No, I'm really not. I'm open, see? I really think cockroaches are going to be around long after we're gone, friend. In fact, Larry, they were here a lot earlier than we came around. You wonder what they... Have you ever wondered what mosquitoes eat when people aren't around? What the hell do they eat? I mean, you can go out into the woods where there's nothing out there. There's nothing but a lot of trees and weeds. And there's 28 million mosquitoes, and the minute you show up, they land on you. What do they eat when you're not there? When there's nobody there? I mean, this has always occurred to me. I guess this, don't come around and tell me they eat dandelions or anything like that. I don't buy that. Mosquitoes are blood men. Oh, they go for it. But here is what is happening, friend. If you want to know what's happening in the world, you got to listen to the world. You can't just listen to Walter Cronkite. You got to hear the world. Have you heard what's been happening in London lately? Well, you know, I don't know what to say about it. It's really, really a fantastic story, and I have heard nothing about it in any of the legitimate news media. And the only way I was able to hear anything about it, one of our spies is over in London, and he sent me a copy out of a London paper. This is only a couple of days old. It's new. It's just happening this minute. And he says, my God, I got over here into London, and he says, nobody ever told me anything about this. He says, and it's the biggest story in London. London is being totally invaded by mice. Fantastic mice by the billions. And I'm not talking about a few mice under the sink. I'm talking about everywhere. Mice. In fact, listen to the story. This is from the Sunday London Gleaner, which is a big paper. In fact, the London Times had a big story on it. But this is written by a guy named Michael Cope. Urgently required a Pied Piper to rid London of a fantastic plague of super mice immune to modern deadly rodent poisons. I mean, these mice are something else. The plague has driven people from their homes. Terrified children, frustrated pest control officials, has become a top priority project at the Ministry of Agriculture, where scientists are now feverishly searching for a new poison. No, they don't know what to do about them. The super mites, quote, super survivalists, not necessarily super size. They're not big. They just get along good, man. There ain't no way to kill these little devils, says the ministry. The plague has so far hit north and northwest London, but is spreading like a wildfire. In one part of the town, here's one housewife, for example, Mrs. Mary Cecil, who lives on the second floor of a duplex, says, listen, quote, the mice seem to love the usual poison I put down for them. They love it. When they're finished it off, the mice, they eat it. When they finished off the poison, they hang around with a sort of wistful look on their faces as though they're pleading for more. They eat the poison and sit around waiting for more. In other words, these are mice that like poison. The hordes of mice scampering through her home make such a noise that she is frequently kept awake throughout the night. She says, now I use a sleeping bag so I can move about the house easily if the noise becomes unbearable in any one room. She just has to, she can't sleep in her bed. So noisy are the mice and so cheeky that that the ground floor tenant... By the way, that's an English expression. Great expression. You hardly ever hear anybody in our country ever refer to as being cheeky. You know, it's a great expression. You cheeky varmint, you know. Just give them one. Anyway, these mice are cheeky. And it says that so noisy are they that in the same building, three tenants on the ground floor have moved out when the rodents started to scamper over his bed and their beds during the night. On another, listen to this story. Now, this is right out of a fantastic, what is that TV series that went off here a couple of years ago that dealt in horror? but almost unbelievable horror. Do you recall a series that was a horror series on TV? Not quite like the Rod Serling series, although something like it. Like stuff. You know, the best horror, when you talk about horror, the best horror is the stuff that deals with truly basic fears of all of us. That are basic. I'm not talking about fears of a more esoteric nature, but I mean basic. For example, all of us have a secret fear, every last one of us, of being touched by something in our beds at night. Do you agree? I mean, something you can't explain. All of a sudden, something touches you in the dark. Especially if... yeah, this is a basic fear. It really is. And something just reaches out and touches you. Something that's not there. I mean, if you know it's somebody in the house, no, that's not going to scare you. But I'm saying you're all alone in this house, and you're in bed, and you're asleep. And you become aware, you wake up in the dark, that something is touching you. Something that's alive. Now that is a scary feeling. You agree that this is a basic fear. Now, there are other basic fears. One of the greatest of all the basic fears is when you're in water, for example, like swimming, that something is going to bite you. Something is going to get you. I'm not talking about in a pool. This is obviously not going to happen. But if you're swimming, say, in the ocean, like at Jones Beach, have you ever had that fear? Well, I'm going to tell you, if you haven't had it, then you are exceptional. In fact, that means then, perhaps, that you have not had enough experience with the ocean. As a matter of fact, I was down in Florida here a few months ago, and there was a fantastic sight. I've been going in and out of the tropical areas for a long time, but I never saw anything quite like this. Now, here's a beach. Got this story. Now, this is a big public beach. In fact, it was in Fort Lauderdale. Now, Fort Lauderdale has one of the most beautiful beaches in the world. It's just a magnificent beach. And there's a lot of people on it, you know? And it's a very civilized beach. And the bottom of the ocean is beautiful white sand, and there's no weeds or anything like that. And it's just a very gradual bottom. There's no big drop-offs or anything like that. And here it was, a bright, sunny day. And I came wandering down to the beach there, and bright sunshine, and there's people walking around on the beach there, and the beach umbrellas and all the, you know, people just there. And I looked out at the water, and I thought at first that there were some weeds or something has come in. Like, you know, you occasionally see crud that drifts in, like weeds or kelp or something like that in the ocean. And I walked over to where it was, right in the shallows. The water wasn't more than 6 or 7 inches deep. And I realized that I was wrong, that it wasn't kelp, it wasn't weeds. There were great schools, fantastic schools of minnows, so tightly packed together, live minnows, swimming like mad, tightly packed together that they were like one solid dark brown mass in the water. You couldn't even see there were minnows. You just saw this great mass right there. And there were all up and down the beach. There were thousands of these patches of minnows, each one containing millions of minnows. All right, now, you're going to say, so what? Just minnows, okay? All right. We're going to carry it further now. here's where the mysterious stuff starts. Now, a minnow is a born victim. You realize that. What is it that a lot of guys use for bait when they fish? Minnows. Correct. So, that follows. Now, use your head. There are large numbers of minnows in the water. What do you think then is the result? That's right. In this shallow water, the water was no more than 2 or 3 feet deep at the most. Just nice, soft waves coming in. Not big waves, just nice, soft summertime waves. Around the outskirts of these patches of minnows, You had to look very careful. Most of the people don't look at what they're doing. Most people walk out and water. They don't have the eye. That's all I can say. You got to have the eye. I saw shadows. I saw a little flash, a little shadow. And sure enough, working on the outside of these schools of minnows are gigantic fish who've come in from the deep water to eat these minnows. Basic, you know, big fish eats the little fish syndrome. That's all there is to it. But the people on the beach didn't see it. They didn't know this, you see, because most people are very civilized. They don't really think in terms of nature being other than benevolent. Most people think of nature as basically Central Park, you know. They do. This is why a lot of ecology people, you know, ecology freak types, they never recognize anything at all pernicious in nature. It's all basically benign. No such thing as evil in nature. It's only evil in man they recognize. And so no matter what's happening, I mean, there would be hooded cobras all over the place, you know, knocking off the camels, hooded cobras everywhere, or sharks. They don't see this. And if there is a shark, well, he's just doing his thing. They never accept the fact that man, when he's doing his thing, like throwing beer bottles in the water, is doing his thing. See, this is man's thing. So nevertheless, I see these things moving. Where they go, and they'd come in. What they would do, they would move in quickly from deeper water, these fish, and they would just hit the school of minnows, like just go right through the edge of it, like a glancing blow, like somebody just hitting a pie, and they go. They'd cut a swath right through these babies, see? And here these kids are walking around there. Well, you know, they're out there, up to their knees in water. And finally I said to somebody, I says, hey, you know, there's some big things coming in out there.
Well, what do you mean, big things? There's minnows.
I said, well, wait a minute, friend. What's that shadow moving out there?
Oh, that's just, yeah, I don't know. It's just a shadow.
I said, wait a minute. I didn't know shadow. So I had I always, when I swim in the ocean, I always carry a snorkel mask with me. So I immediately, under I go, you see, and this is only in 3 feet of water. And sure enough, all around me, I see these all types. There were not just one type. All types of, many types of fish. Oh, 4 or 5, as long as 6 feet. Big babies, like the 6 feet one, if curious what they were. There were a few sand sharks in the crowd. Yes, indeed. There were a couple of real mean barracudas moving around in there. And here's what happened. Of course, you're going to say, well, they don't hurt anybody. Well, not so. Because that afternoon, I'm running up and down the beach. I'm told, look out. You know, there's stuff coming in. They look at me like I'm a nut, see? So that very afternoon, about an hour after I was there, there was a guy standing in the usual clod, you know, with his Madras shorts on, you know, and his rubber ducky. You know, the whole scene. He's out there in the water, you know, flubbing around. When all of a sudden, pow, something hits him. Just like that. Right above his wrist and below his elbow, something slashed him from almost to the bone. Just shunk. And the blood, of course, is flowing like insane. And I'm about 15 or as... Oh, maybe 15 or 20 feet away from the beach at the time, and I hear this uproar, saying, I go back to the beach, and sure enough, there's a big crowd around this guy, and nobody seems to know what happened to him. Again, people don't relate to the water. See, they think something, quote, cut him in the water, you know, like a piece of wire or something, see. And obviously, here's what had happened. This guy was hit by a barracuda. Not a shark, but a barracuda. Well, I'll hit you like that. And the reason that this barracuda hit him was because when they get into a feeding frenzy. Now, this is something that I have to jump ahead because people are going to say, oh, what do you mean? I'm going to get 1,000 letters saying that barracuda won't hit. That's right. Barracuda will not hit you under normal circumstances. But these fish were frenzied. They were frenzied by the feeding. It was like it's like Saturday night in a bar. That you take a guy who's been drinking like mad Saturday night in the bar, and he's really feeling like he's 40 feet tall, he's liable to attack the phone booth in a fist fight. He'll do something totally unrelated the way he normally is. Do you agree with that, Larry? You've seen guys do this, and it's a curious frenzy that sets in. And this really affects fish, that when the fish are in a feeding frenzy, they will hit anything that is in the water. Anything. And so any guy that's done much deep sea fishing knows that if you get a group of sharks, and normally they swim around and they'll hit something if they see it's something to eat, and they'll knock off this fish or something like that. But if you take a large amount of meat and you chop it up and you throw it in there and you just keep throwing it, meat and blood, and the next thing you know, thousands of sharks will be attacking each other. They'll be attacking the bottom of the boat. They'll be eating the sand on the bottom of the ocean. They'll be jumping up and biting at clouds. They'll hit anything. See? They get into this frenzy. And at that point, it is advisable to stay out of the water. I mean, I'm just warning you, it's advisable to stay out of the water. Well, these fish were in a feeding frenzy. And they were coming in and they were hitting these minnows, see, which meant that, of course, anything that moved was fair game for them, see. And if you were wearing a watch or something on you that flashed like a minnow, wham, he's going to hit it. And that's exactly what happened to this guy. He had a watch on, a waterproof watch. And the watch flashed in the water, and this fish apparently hit at the watch. He didn't hit at his arm. He hit at the watch, missed the watch, and just slashed him right up. Zap! You could see the tendons in this guy's arm. Whew! And the people are all standing around looking at their eyeballs, bugging out, see? They had met nature in the raw, and they realized that nature is not so easily explained. Well, there's great little moments on the beach. Well, now, this is a basic fear, people. Now, I'm sure this guy is never going to approach the water the same as he did that afternoon. It's the whole ball game has changed. That something out of the... And he never saw it. He never even saw what hit him. He did not see what hit him. And that's even part of the basic fear. If you can see something, you don't fear it as much. But this thing hit him and got away real quick. Just left that blood pouring out of him. And the guy was practically hysterical. So there's all kinds of basic fears. You know what's another one of the most basic of all human fears? In fact, they can even tell this in children, babies that are only minutes old. They have no knowledge of anything. So they're pure instinct. The child at the age of, say, 6 hours, pure instinct. What do you think one of the great fears that all children have? I mean, the basic animal, human animal. The fear of falling. The fear of falling. Have you ever taken a little tiny kid and he hangs out to you? Oh, my God. You know, he just, it's not because he digs you. It's because he's afraid of landing on his head. And it's basic. It's absolutely basic. And this is why there's so many mysterious myths about flying. People are secretly, this gets them very nervous. Even though they may attempt to be sophisticated about it, and they may, you know, try to ride over it and pretend, oh, no, you know, this is ridiculous. There is a very, very elemental subterranean fear that is instinctual. You can't do away with it. It's an instinctual fear of fighting, of falling, of just suddenly no props under you, and down you go. It's instinctual. And so, for that reason, man makes instinctual adjustments to it. Now, you take beaches. Generally, nobody ever mentions anything about a beach, about anything being out there. You'll never find any discussion of what's... It's like the time I was doing some skin diving in Jamaica. Beautiful country. And I was... all the water was fairly... shallow deep, let's put it that way, maybe about 10 feet deep. The kind of depth where you would swim in, but not necessarily, you couldn't walk around it, much deeper than that. And I'm swimming along down about 3 or 4 feet from the bottom of the water there, just edging along the bottom, wearing diving gear, when suddenly laying there on this beautiful sand, right near where people were swimming, just lying there on the bottom, was a stonefish. Now, do you know what a stonefish is, Larry? You should know. You should know, man. You should know. A stonefish has, it's a fish that has spines on it. And it looks exactly like sand. It's almost invisible. It just lays on the bottom. Just lays like a rock. It's got these spines all over it. The only thing that makes him different from most stones is that his spines contain one of the most deadly poisons known. You step on a stonefish, and you better be well insured. It's all over. He is. Yeah, he is. It's all over. And even if you step on one that's been dead for weeks and is washed up on the shore, that there have been more than one case of a guy walking along a beach and stepping on a just a fragment of an old dead stonefish. He didn't know what it was. It looked like weed or something. He just walked along with his bare feet. And he steps on this thing, and it's not as deadly under those circumstances. But there are cases of guys like almost dying, and if you have a certain heart condition, it's all over. So here he is. He's lying on a beach there. You're just lying on the bottom. And the people are all swimming around about 15 or 20 feet away. You know, they're not even worried about this. Most people have never even heard of a stonefish. Now, I'll tell you another basic... Listen to this. If you talk about basic fears, basic fear of being attacked by something that is maniacal without any reason. Now, this is what's happening in London. People are really afraid, see, of the millions of mice. Because it's completely out of your ken. It would be, what would you feel like if suddenly your house is surrounded by, for no reason, 2 million raccoons? I mean 2 million. I don't mean six. I mean, everywhere you go, raccoons are leaping out at you. Well, what was originally benign then becomes dangerous. See, a raccoon in itself is not going to frighten you. 2 million would. You begin to worry. Listen to this. A workman was bicycling home late at night in London about 2 weeks ago when he was attacked by a swarm of thousands of mice and apparently were starving. They were very hungry. Thousands of mice attacked this guy on his bike. When he got home, he found from the knees down, his trousers were hanging in shreds. I'm quoting him. My socks disappeared at the point where my ankles were joined by my boots. My legs were scratched and bleeding, and the bicycle was covered with blood. The wheels were buckled, and the spokes were covered with bits of fur. What a fantastic image. Can you imagine a Twilight Zone episode of a guy riding his bike? Just driving along, you know, he's riding, he's an old guy riding his bike when suddenly he's attacked by millions of tiny mice who rip his pants to shreds and get ground up on the wheels by the millions. And this is what's been happening in London lately. You've heard nothing on the news about it, have you? Well, man, I'll tell you, when people are attacked by millions of mice on the street on their bicycles, you realize that's news. To me, this is really news. Something is happening. Now, why all of a sudden the millions of mice? No, who knows? But, you know, speaking of other secret fears, and the mice are part of that secret fear, we all have a basic secret fear. In fact, there is a scientific name for it. And that's the fear, the serious fear of spiders. I mean spiders. A spider has been seen as a sinister object almost as much as the snake. And about 2 or 3 months ago, I had a fantastic episode that I couldn't believe. I could not believe what I was seeing. Have you ever seen a tarantula? You know what, the big ones, the great big ones with fur on them. I mean, oh, these are mean. Big. I mean, they're big. They're about the size of mice themselves, you know? Well, I was floating in water in a little boat, and we drifted, and this was in the tropics, we drifted up to a tiny deserted dock that was just sitting on the side of this water, this tropical water. And the person who was with me jumped up on the dock to pull the rope, the line from the boat. We're going to try to land on this dock when all of a sudden he lets out a yell. He says, look, what the hell, what's going on? And he's jumping around and he tries to get back in the boat. And it was then that I saw what was happening. The entire dock. I never saw a sight in my life like it. The entire dock. The minute he stepped on it, apparently this little vibration set him off. The dock was literally, actually covered with tarantulas. Thousands of them. Huge tarantulas, roughly that big, with fur. And they were moving, you know, they move in a strange way. And I'll tell you, they got a crazier walk than W.C. Fields. I'm telling you, they were walking. This guy was going out of his bird, see? And he's trying to get back in a boat. Well, obviously, there was a problem. As he tries to jump in a boat, these things are running around on his feet. And he's kicking his feet like that. And the fear was that they would get back in the boat. Well, that's what happened. He jumped back in the boat, and there's about 10 tarantulas made it into the boat with him. So we started to flip these babies out. And we finally cleared the boat of all tarantulas. And we just drifted out in the water. And this dock looked very benign, quiet, and innocent. We just drifted away from it. We sat in this boat from at home. You know, if there was ever a moment when you needed... I mean, you needed more than a beer, I'll tell you this. I mean, it was one of those kind of things. And we were just going to go on this dock. We're going to sit down, you know, and pop open a couple of cans of beer and eat a sandwich and proceed. We just sat in this boat and we looked over at that dock, see. There was nothing else around it. This dock was in a very deserted place. Nothing but sand and palmettos and stuff. Millions of moving tarantulas. And you know, speaking of strange, mysterious attacks that nature is creating, do you know that one of the most famous stunt flyers in America was killed recently? His airplane, he was doing a maneuver where he was flying upside down, and for apparently inexplicable reasons, his plane didn't come out of it, and he crashed right into some trees. A great stunt flyer. And when they investigated the accident, they found... under his seat, in his plane, unbeknownst, of course, to anybody, a nest of black widow spiders had taken hold. And apparently, right in the middle of his great aerobatic exhibition, he was struck, hit by a black widow spider. And one of the first things that that serum causes is temporary blindness. He couldn't see. And he crashed, and it was all over. Now, there's a fantastic thing. Can you imagine? You couldn't write that kind of fiction. A stunt flyer attacked by a black widow spider. Oh, man. It's everywhere. Oh, this is WOR New York. Speaking of... stay tuned for Lester Smith in the news.
This is the news in detail.